This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. In a time machine, thanks to Moody al-Rashid, her new book, Between Two Rivers, Ancient Mesopotamia and the Birth of History. We leave the first millennium BCE and we travel back in time. There are four or five cities that are necessary to talk about, and each of them are built of bricks. What kind of bricks? Bricks from the mud, the clay mud of the Tigris and Euphrates, which are going back and forth like whipping snakes over these thousands of years. 3,000 was wetter than 2,000, and the climate of today is not typical of all of these periods. So I just mentioned climate is a moving story too. But we go to the bricks that themselves that build the cities. I learned from you they tell a story, sometimes a purposeful story of strength, sometimes acknowledging to gods. There are millions of bricks. You seem to have come up with some winners. How did you do that, Moody?
Yes, I mean, there are millions and millions of bricks that still scatter the landscape of modern Iraq and Syria and the surrounding neighboring countries. And once upon a time in the first millennium BCE, someone found one of these very ancient bricks, which came from around 2000 BCE and decided to keep it. And we're not sure why. It may have been because this was a brick that had a curse on it, that may have had a curse on it that said that whoever damages this statue that this brick is holding up, may their offspring be cut off. In other words, may their future line be cut off. And bricks really tell us, it's not a sort of very romantic object, but they can really tell us a lot about people's beliefs. Buildings, in a way, are stories. And I think architecture can tell us a lot about what people thought was important. So temples, for example, of course, tell us how important deities were. A temple in ancient Mesopotamia was actually the house of a deity. The word for temple in Sumerian, one of the languages, primary languages in use in the region, is just the sound e, and it means house. And similarly, in Akkadian, the other primary language used in the region at the time, it's bitu, which may sound familiar to anyone who speaks a Semitic language. Sounds like bait in Arabic, for example, and that also just means house. So these temples, they went to great efforts to build these towering ziggurats with temples on top of them as earthly homes of these deities. And these are huge logistical undertakings involving tons of people, vast skill sets, labor hours, materials, and coordination. But then things like city walls can also tell us that at some point, people thought it was important to encircle their city with a wall. And one of the earliest cities, sometimes called the earliest city, although I think there's new archaeological evidence that's dethroning that title, is called Uruk. And the wall around Uruk was 9 kilometers long. And millions of bricks, I can't remember the exact number, but it's sort of tens of millions of bricks must have been used to build this wall. But even residential architecture can tell us something. The way bricks were used inside houses. Inside people's houses, there were crypts where they buried their dead family members. And of course, they're sort of topped with bricks. And so it tells us something about that sort of sensory experience of death and grief and how people wanted to stay close to the people they had lost. So something as foundational and seemingly boring as a mud brick can really tell us so much about society, about what people thought was important, of worth building, and worth keeping, including in a possibly a very ancient museum.
The bricks are made from clay, and how do they turn that clay into something solid to build with? What's the process, Moody?
Yeah, so they use these sort of molds made out of baskets, and they would mix clay and straw or reed, and sometimes animal dung all together, and then they would dry them in the sun en masse. I mean, millions of bricks would be drying en masse. For very important building works, they would bake them to ensure that they were really solid. And then they would stick them together with bitumen, which really sort of bubbles up in the landscape of ancient Iraq in particular sites in the region and would be transported for use on major building works. But if they didn't have access to bitumen or for something that's not so important, something that's not as important as, say, a temple or a palace, they would just use more mud to stick the bricks together. So really their architecture, the building blocks blocks of their society come from their landscape, as do the building blocks for their kind of their writing system also come from the landscape. They're really rich, fertile landscape.
For you who understand that all dogs are the best dogs in the universe, we now go to a paw story in the bricks. What have we found?
Yeah, there's so many lovely examples of this. So if you imagine all these bricks laying out to dry in the sun, there would be animals out and about, including dogs. And there are some lovely bricks that preserve the paw prints of a dog. I think the dog would have been about 30 pounds or so. So maybe a mastiff puppy or the size of a collie who's just walking around and left their paw prints for posterity. But there are also human footprints too on some of these bricks, footprints of kids who may have been running around the drying bricks as well. And it's just such a lovely little window onto, yeah, our canine friends thousands of years ago.
Are there bricks that are special and written on, or is it random when you find the bricks?
Yeah, great question. So some bricks get stamped with an inscription, and we sort of in the field call it the earliest printing press because it's essentially a stamp. And there have been stamps recovered in archaeological excavations. They're not a kind of theorized thing, with the inscription in reverse on it. And then they would just stamp the brick and the inscription would come out in the correct order, usually saying the name of the king responsible for the building works, and the name of the building or the god that the building is dedicated to. For example, in Ur, if we go back to Ur, where Enigaldinana served as the high priestess to the moon god, the ziggurat there, the great ziggurat there, which is still there, the bricks are, a lot of the bricks are stamped with the earliest builder of that ziggurat, whose name is Ur-Nammu, and he lived around 2000 BCE. So it says something like, building built by Ur-Nammu in dedication to the moon god. Something that simple. But what the stamps do is they make it possible to stamp many, many bricks without having to rely on the expertise and time of a scribe. Anyone could stamp a brick. So it was, yeah, quite an interesting innovation that they made.
Did they understand that the bricks, if stamped, gave strength to the walls that wouldn't have been if it wasn't stamped? Or was it a contractor's game?
That's a great question, actually. I do think that the stamps carried a great importance because they wouldn't have bothered otherwise. And they do bury inscriptions dedicated to the gods as well. So in a way, these are all messages to the gods saying, I did this for you. Look what a good king I am. Look what a pious king I am. So even if people couldn't read the inscriptions, the gods surely could, was the idea. So I do think it lent added importance, added meaning to these building blocks.
And the ziggurat in Ur and the ziggurat in Uruk, were they built with different kinds of bricks or the same as the walls?
Pretty much the same. I mean, there's some variation in size, in shapes across the time periods and for certain buildings, but overall they use the same materials, the same methods, the same drying or baking, and the same mortar. Either the bitumen or more mud. So it was there was quite a bit of shared building strategies across the entire region.
And what language they used and how they understood that language is critical. And we're going to turn to that because we're going to tell a whale of a story about a king named Gilgamesh. Between Two Rivers is the book, Ancient Mesopotamia and the Birth of History, and Gilgamesh's story. Moody Al-Rashid is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.